Chapter 6. For years, Nora did not weep. Could not weep. She joined the Rebel Alliance as a pilot, and when the decision was made, a decision made less in her head and more in her gut, she cinched everything up, put extra steel in her spine. All the fears and worries and emotions became extraneous things. Anchors, she thought, mooring her to an old life, to an old way of thinking. If she was going to make it through this, then she had to cut those fetters with a cold, merciless knife, leave them behind her. The Alliance deserved that much from her. This fight afforded them no time for weeping. They did not possess the luxury of looking back. Since she joined the fight, she has had two moments when she wept. The first was only months earlier, after the battle over Endor had concluded. After she and her Y-Wing and her laser-crisped astromech emerged from the labyrinth of half-constructed passages inside the second Death Star, just escaping in a plume of flame as the whole thing began to implode and then explode behind her, the shockwaves causing her little fighter to tumble end over end until she almost passed out. That night, she sat alone in a changing room on the Star Cruiser Home One, and sitting there half in and half out of her jumpsuit, she wept, like a baby without its mother. Hard, racking sobs hit her like crashing waves until she was curled up on the floor, feeling gutted. A day later, she got her medal. She smiled, turned toward the applause of the crowd. She didn't show them how stripped down and scraped clean she really felt. The second time is right here, right now, holding her son and feeling his arms around her in turn. The tears that spill now are not the throttling sobs of that night months ago, but tears of happiness, and though she is hesitant to admit it, even in her own mind, of shame. It feels like a completed circuit. What she lost that night in the battle is returned right here, right now. Then she felt gutted. Now she feels filled up once more. And then everything snaps forward. Time unfixes its feet from this slow, perfect moment. She has not seen her son in years, after all. And suddenly, Temin reveals himself less a child and more a man. He's young, but starting to grow into himself. Lean, ropey, a mass of dark hair sprouting up off the top of his head. He's snapping to the strange battle droid on the floor, clapping his hands.
Bones! Pull the spear around back! We need to load these slime-guzzling hut mothers up, and you need to fly them out far as you can along the Trabzon Road. I'm talking all the way to the Korobides!
Here he turns to her and says,
these eddies of water where the river meets the road. Rapids.
Then back to the droid.
You hear me, Bones?
The B-1 battle droid stands up, all the bones dangling from its body rattling as it does. The mechanical man gives an awkward salute, and in a garbled, distorted voice says,
Roger, Roger! Bodies be gone, Master!
Then the robot hums a discordant tune as it begins to drag the thugs out toward a back portal door. Temin calls after.
Cover them up before you go! Use that blanket!
From outside, the mechanized voice,
Roger, Roger, Master!
Nora says,
Temin, I don't know what's happening.
Mom, not now!
He snaps.
Here, come on!
He hurries across the room, hopping over a pile of spilled junk. He reaches up for the dented skull of an old translator droid, and with his fingers forked, presses in on the eyes. They depress with loud clicks. And a few meters away, a shelf slides away, and after it, a section of wall. Revealed behind the opening is a set of steps. Temin waves her on.
Come on! Come on!
Then he ducks down the passage. This is all a bit dizzying, but what choice does she have? Nora skirts the edge of the junk shop and follows her son down the staircase. Her boots clank on the metal steps. It gets darker and darker until she can't see anything. And then... lights. garish, bright, coming on one bulb at a time. A room like the one upstairs, except the shelves are clean, shining, and home not to junk, not to trash, but to bona fide treasures. Treasures ranging from top-shelf technology to strange artifacts.
"Welcome to the real Temmin's Mercantile," he says.
She sees parts for droids that haven't existed since she was a little girl. A rack of high-end blaster rifles, a crate of thermal detonators, a shelf of old books and mysterious patina-darkened vases depicting images of men in dark robes with red faces.
"I don't understand," she says.
"Upstairs, I sell junk. Down here, different story."
"No," she says. "I mean, we used to live here. This was our home. What happened?"
He stops and stares at her, regarding her almost like she's a stranger.
"What happened is, you left."
The sudden silence between them rises like an invisible wall. And then, as soon as it arrives, it breaks again, and Temmin is once more wheeling around the room, chattering as he does.
"So, Sarat knows all of this is down here. That's not good. And he knows I stole this, too."
Here, Temmin points to a matte black crate bound up with carbon-banded locks.
"I stole it from Sarat. Some kind of weapon, I guess. No idea what it does. He knows it's down here, but what he doesn't know, what he can't know is..."
Her son hurries over to the opposite corner and whips a blue tarp off something. An old Valacord. Their old Valacord. The instrument wasn't an artifact from ancient history, but rather from Temmin's own. And here the memory hits her like a gale force wind. Temmin and his father, Brenton, sitting at that very Valacord, playing one of the old jaunty minor songs together and laughing. Temmin says,
"Watch, or rather, listen."
He taps out five notes on the keys. The first five notes of one of those old miner's songs. The shanty of cart and cobble. And with that, another door opens up. This one with a pop and a hiss. Even as it opens, a faint breeze keens through the old stone walls beyond. She smells mold, decay. Something metallic.
"No way Sarat knows about this," he says.
It hits her then. The glint in his eyes. The smirk on his face. At first she thought he reminded her of his father. But maybe, just maybe, he reminds her of her.
"Temmin."
"So, if we go into the old passages underneath the city and..."
"Temmin!"
She uses her motherly voice. The one she uses to get people's attention. Nora softens it.
"Son, can we take a moment?"
"Time matters. Those thugs who are here, eventually they're going to wake up and crawl back to their boss on the other side of town. Sarat won't let that stand. What I did, he'll send someone bigger, meaner, or most likely, he'll just come here himself."
She walks closer to him.
"Temmin, I don't know what's going on here. All of this is alien to me."
"Because you've been gone. For 3 years."
I know.
3 years you haven't been back here.
The rebellion needed people."
The volume of his voice ticks upward as he grows more agitated, more angry.
"No, I needed my father back. And you thought joining the rebellion might help find him. But did it?"
He peers around her side, as if she's hiding something behind her back.
"I don't see him anywhere. Is Dad here? Are you hiding him? Is he a surprise? A birthday gift to make up for the 3 you missed?" "No, I don't think so."
"There was a larger fight taking place. It wasn't just about your father. It was about all the fathers. All the sons and mothers and families lost to or trapped by the Empire. We fought. I was at the Battle of Endor."
"Who cares? Spare me the heroics. I don't need a hero."
"You will respect your mother,"
she barks at him.
"Oh,"
he laughs, a mirthless sound.
"Will I? Here's the holonews, lady. I don't need to respect you. I'm not a little kid anymore. I'm grown.
You're still a boy. 14 years...
15!
She winces. He continues.
I'm my own man. Other kids had parents, but I didn't. I had a mom who flew the coop. Months without hearing from you each time. I had to make do. So I did. Now, I'm a businessman. And I need to keep my business safe. You made your choice. Between me and the galaxy, you chose the galaxy. So don't pretend like I matter now.
You matter? Temin, by all the stars, you matter to me. I'm here to take you with me. I have a smuggler ready to take us off-world, and...
At her belt, the comm relay crackles to life, vibrating as it does. Which means an emergency call. A New Republic signal. A voice all too familiar to her fills the air.
This is Captain Wedge Antilles of the New Republic. Repeat, this is Wedge Antilles of the New Republic. I'm trapped on the Star Destroyer Vigilance in the space above Akiva, and I am in...
Then the sound of a blaster. Wedge cries out in pain, and... The call ends. Her blood goes cold. Her mind wanders. Nora tries to figure out what that even means. Captain Antilles is here? On one of those Imperial destroyers? Something really is going on. And suddenly, she's at the heart of it. Again.
There's that look, Temin says.
What?
She asks, suddenly distracted.
It's that face you make when you're about to disappoint me again.
Temin, please. This is important.
Oh, trust me, I know. I can always tell when something is important. Because you go chasing after it, leaving us unimportant losers behind.
And with that, he ducks down the side passage. She hurries after him, but he pulls a lever on the other side. The door slams shut between them.